It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A much-anticipated education reform bill has been revealed at the West Virginia legislature, drawing scrutiny from education union leaders. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. After weeks of speculation over the contents of an education reform bill, lawmakers in the West Virginia Senate are now releasing details of the legislation, widely known as the Omnibus Bill. The legislation is set to offer pay raises and address health care, but also offer additional components opposed by leaders of teacher and service personnel unions. Dave Mistich has more.
The measure originated in the Senate Education Committee, but hasn't been formally introduced. The committee met Thursday to hear a presentation about the 100-page-plus bill in progress. Education Chair Patricia Rucker told the committee the meeting would be informational only, and there would be little time to ask questions about the bill.
Before we get started, I want to let everybody know this is just going to be a presentation. We are not going to delve deeply. I know that the draft was only made available just a few hours ago, so we are going to give the committee plenty of, time to digest it and look over it overnight.
Committee counsel then outlined the bill over the course of a nearly hour-long presentation, detailing a laundry list of proposals, including pay raises, funding for PEIA, differential pay, the establishment of charter schools, education savings accounts, increasing the teacher-pupil ratio for K through 6 classrooms, and other provisions that leaders of teachers' unions call a quote-unquote attack on public education. Democrats on the committee expressed concerns over the timeline of the bill's progress, the cost of such an expansive proposal, and the multiple versions of the bill in front of them during the meeting. Here's Senator Stephen Baldwin of Greenbrier County.
I got a bill a couple hours ago that was 140-some pages. Then I got a different version that's 130-some pages. And this is, as you said rightly, a comprehensive bill. And I'm trying to sort through it.
Of course.
And it's especially difficult if we have different versions floating before us and are then told, well, we may vote on this tomorrow. So is it your intention that we will have a single version and that we may very well vote on this tomorrow?
That is a possibility.
The spotlight on public education began last legislative session when educators and school service personnel went on a 9-day statewide strike demanding better pay and more funding for their health insurance program. After holdouts from Senate Republicans, the strike ended when lawmakers agreed to an average 5% pay increase for all state employees and funding for the Public Employees Insurance Agency. Other education bills were introduced last session that received less attention. Union leaders representing educators and service personnel fought against many of them. This session, those proposals are back, this time wrapped up in the same bill as the pay hike and another temporary health care solution. Senate President Mitch Carmichael says this session's comprehensive education reform is a quote-unquote moral imperative, and that the provisions of the bill, as they work their way through the legislative process, keep students as the top priority.
I'm certain that there are some teachers and some union leaders that would rather just have an enormous pay raise, which is a component of this bill, and not reform the system in any manner. But I'm confident that really great teachers want to have the opportunity to do their job in the best possible manner. And I believe, I'm completely committed to the fact this bill enables teachers to do their job that they're trained to do and gets the state out of the way and compensates them accordingly.
A month before the 2018 midterm election, Governor Jim Justice and Republican legislative leaders like Carmichael announced intentions to provide another round of pay raises and $100 million dedicated to PEIA. During his State of the State address, Governor Justice increased his proposal to fund PEIA to $150 million. But union leaders like American Federation of Teachers West Virginia President Fred Albert say the bill's additional provisions are not in the interest of public education. They also say the speed at which this bill might flow through the committee process is troubling.
I guess the first word that comes to my mind is confusion. It seemed to be, to me, in that room, in the committee room today, there was lots of confusion, especially from those senators who had not been able to see a copy of this proposed bill in the draft form.
The Senate Education Committee is set to continue discussion of the bill today. A draft copy of the bill, although it has not been formally introduced, is available online. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
On the set of the legislature today, health reporter Carol Lofton spoke with Bob Hansen, the new director for the West Virginia Office of Drug Control Policy, and Brian Gallagher, chair of the Governor's Council on Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment, about what's being done to help get a handle on West Virginia's opioid crisis.
Bob, you are new in your position. Talk to us a little bit about your goals for the job and what you hope to accomplish this year.
My first goal has got to be to reduce overdose fatalities. I think that's got to be foremost in our minds, is to reduce the number of people that are passing away due to the drug epidemic. So that's got to be the number one priority. There are a lot of other things that we need to be tackling, but that's got to be the first thing on our plate.
And in that vein, I know that West Virginia has announced recently that they will be doubling the number of treatment beds in the state. That's huge. Why the focus on treatment beds specifically?
Well, that growth in treatment beds really starts with the passage of the Ryan Brown Act and the funding for those beds several years ago. So these programs have been in development over the last year and now are going to be coming online throughout 2019. So that's a big resource for us because we're almost doubling the number of residential treatment beds in our state.
The importance of treatment beds can't be overstated, really, because as Bob was saying, we save people's lives by giving them naloxone, then we go and try to get them into treatment, and that's the next step. So the rate limiting step right now is having an adequate number of treatment providers and beds to be able to get people into treatment, and that's the next step on the road to recovery.
So are you working on any policy around substance abuse prevention and treatment specifically?
I think on the treatment side, the residential bed increase this year is going to be great, but also we've got to expand medication-assisted treatment and other outpatient services throughout our state. I think one of our goals, it has to be that we have services and treatment available in every county in some fashion. So we need to improve access because people who need help need it quickly, and we've got to work on the access issue and increasing our treatment options.
Yeah, so medication-assisted treatment, there's a bit of controversy about that, and you know that needs to be addressed as well because, again, as a pharmacist, the closest a disease state that comes to mind that's analogous to that is depression. It's not the same by any stretch of the imagination, but there's basically three ways of going down with treating depression. There's some people that are able to fight through it without medication. There's some people that need to be on medication for a relatively short period of time. And there's some people that are going to have to be on the medication for a longer period of time. And it's the same thing with this. So now we have three medications that we can use. Some people will not need medication. Some people can be weaned off of the medication. Some people need have it for longer term, but it's not back in the days when methadone was the only thing that we had. Now we've got two other very effective drugs, but again, like so many disease states, there's a number of different drugs that work better for one person than work better for another, or therapy.
And even though we're emphasizing medication-assisted treatment, I think we both believe that that it's an individual decision and there should be many pathways to recovery. That includes abstinence-based, faith-based, medication-assisted treatment. Whatever works for that individual is something that we need to encourage and foster in our state.
Medication-assisted treatment is still controversial in many circles, including in members of the legislature. I mean, is expanding access to MAT central to basically your plan of attack for dealing with this?
Importantly, it's a very important arrow in our quiver, for want of a better term. It's evidence-based. It's shown that it does work. And so there's a lot of studies, a lot of good data. Federal government's releasing a lot of money to support medication-assisted treatment. Why? Because it works. And so are some things better for one patient than another? Absolutely, but we've got to use that, and because it is evidence-based and something that's going to help these people.
And sometimes, though, I mean, one of the things that we come up against, especially with something like health and mental health specifically, is it can be evidence-based, but there is still stigma surrounding a practice. So when we talk about treating substance use disorder, part of it is really just treating perception of how people became addicted and how they should be treated. How do you do that?
That's a great question, but we really have to look at it and attack it from many different angles and really educate key stakeholders throughout our state, be it employers, key business people. I mean, just providing education and also letting people who have lived experience, who are in recovery and in working back in our communities, you know, if they're willing, have them share their stories, you know, that recovery is possible. And, you know, it's something that we just need to continue to work on. I think we've made progress as a state over the last year, but we still obviously have a long way to go.
It's one of the things that makes this problem so complex in trying to address, because there's a whole spectrum of people. Not everybody got to addiction by the same route. There's a role for law enforcement. There's people that have substance use disorder that need to go to jail. But that's not everybody. And before we were saying we can arrest our way out of this. There's a whole bunch of people that got substance use disorder because they got injured at work, they took the drug exactly the way the doctor prescribed it, exactly the way the pharmacist dispensed it, and they got this because they followed instructions. We need to help them all we can. And there's a whole array of people, not all patients, but there are a wide array of different approaches that have to be taken to this, not only on the side of treatment, but then after they pass through the addiction, they need different supports after you get through with this. Some person need a job, some people need job training, and some people need housing, all of these different things. It's a very complicated problem to address.
That was health reporter Carol Lofton speaking with Bob Hansen, the new director for the West Virginia Office of Drug Control Policy, and Brian Gallagher, chair of the Governor's Council on Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. Our Mountain Stage Song of the Week is More Than a Name on the Wall by Daly and Vincent. Larry Gross calls it one of the most patriotic songs ever performed on Mountain Stage.
I saw her from a distance as she walked up to the wall. In her hand she held some flowers as her tears began to fall. She took out pen and paper as to trace her memory. She looked up to heaven, and the words she said were these. She said, Lord, my boy was special, and he meant so much to me. You know I'd love to see him just one more time, you see. All I and the moments to recall. So Lord, could you tell him he's more than a name on the wall?
She said he really missed the family and being home on Christmas Day. And he died for God and country in a place so far away. I remember just a little boy playing war since he was three. But Lord, this time I know he's not coming home to me.
She said, Lord, my boy was special,
Daly and Vincent singing More Than a Name on the Wall. To hear this and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.
And thank you for joining us during West Virginia Morning. And we're coming to you live from the studios here in Charleston with our 2019 Chocolate Challenge, the West Virginia Treasures Chocolate Challenge. Marilyn DeVita is here with me in the studio. And we're wanting you to go to the phone or go online to wvpublic.org and click that button and become a sustainer and protect and sustain your West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
And we are very close to our hourly goal, just a couple hundred dollars, and you can make the difference. That's a couple of boxes of chocolates, the big box, or a few of the smaller boxes. It's all on you. You can make it happen because you're listening right now. It's important for you to help sustain this news service. There's a lot going on here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You've listened to it this morning and you know it. So now step forward and be a part of the goal this hour with your sustaining pledge.
And when you do so right now at that $12 a month sustaining gift level, we'll say thank you with that 1 pound. That's 32 pieces of Hall's chocolate. That's the Hall's chocolates made right here in Vienna, West Virginia, using the same traditional Swiss techniques they learned generations ago and they brought here to the Mountain State. And we want you to become a member of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
That's right. Fritz Hall brought his skills. Dominic's continuing it. And now you can close the circle with your pledge of support and your box of chocolates, if you'd like, at 1-800-RADIO87. Do it right now.